We're talking this hour about peer review and publishing amidst allegations that a South Korean researcher, Hwang Woo-suk, had fabricated at least a part of his data in what was hailed as a landmark paper. With me is Catherine DeAngelis, editor-in-chief of the Journal of the American Medical Association. And now we're going to turn slightly. And in addition to the scientific questions about his work, Hwang has faced some ethical criticism for the way his team got the eggs needed for his cloning experiments. Okay, so why do you need eggs for cloning? Well, to make a cloned embryo, you take a woman's egg and you remove the egg's nucleus and replace it with the nucleus from a cell taken from an adult donor. And if everything works, the donor egg with the adult cell nucleus starts growing, and after a few days, it's possible to obtain embryonic stem cells that are a genetic match of the adult donor. About 2 weeks ago, it came to light that some of the eggs Hwang used for his early experiments were donated by junior researchers on his research, on his scientific team. And that raises the possibility of coercion, because Dr. Hwang had, was the leader of the lab, and the junior researchers might feel compelled to donate, and coercion is something that bioethicists generally frown upon. Other eggs, it turns out, came from women who were paid for their donations, and some people think that's inappropriate. Joining me now to talk more about the ethics of egg donation is Lori Zoloth, professor of medical humanities, bioethics, and religion at Northwestern University. She's also the director of the Center for Bioethics, Science, and Society, and a board member of the International Society for Stem Cell Research. She joins us by phone from Chicago. Thanks for being on the program, Dr. Zoloth.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
And also, we expect to be joined in a little while by Anne Kiesling, who is the founder and director of the Bedford Stem Cell Research Foundation. She's also an associate professor of surgery at the Harvard Medical School in Boston, and she'll be, I hope, joining us shortly. But, Lori Zoloth, maybe I can just start with you. And before we get too much into the issue of the ethics of all this, as someone who's very involved in the stem cell field, What do the problems that Dr. Hwang is having, what does that do to the field?
Well, this is a sad day, actually. It's a tragedy in the Greek sense, because it has all these elements of a great relationship, a great friendship, international friendship between men who collaborated quite closely, men and women, who we respected, we came to know, we came to respect, and came to be excited by their excitement and their national excitement and pride in the work. And the work was checked not just by the researchers in science, but by really dozens of people who were invited warmly into the lab, who looked at the research and certainly spent a lot of time looking closely at the details of the work, including, I might add, at bioethicists who had come in some numbers to look, including myself, who had looked at and met with the ethical standards, the ethics task force, met with people both within and without Seoul National University, and felt like this was a solid piece of work, both in ethics and our scientist colleagues told us, and in science. So to have it being unraveled and in the press in this very desperate and public way, with the researchers sobbing on Korean television, and hospitalized and making ever more desperate charges and countercharges, it's a tragic moment for the field. And we're Americans. We believe people are really innocent until they're proven guilty, and so the claim is, will have to be carefully proved, which might take a while. But we have to, at this point, consider this still as charges and countercharges, not as proven facts of fraud. If it is proven, it will be one of the great tragic stories of science and of the failure of science to tell the truthful narrative. And that's one of the worst things one can do in science, is to deceive.
Okay, Dr. Zoloth, we've just been joined by Dr. Anne Kiesling. And she is also a researcher in this field, in addition to someone who thinks about the ethics of egg donation. And I asked Dr. Zoloth, I'm interested in asking you, what do you think the problems that Dr. Hwang is having in Korea and the possibility that he fabricated some of his data is doing to the field of stem cell research?
Oh, what it's actually doing. Hello. What it's actually doing to the field?
Yes.
I think it's too soon to tell that. It's obviously of concern to all of us. This is a tragedy, if it's true. I think one of the things that's interesting is that much of the controversy around the research was actually brought to the fore by South Korean scientists. Can you hear? So I think this is in some ways an example of science policing itself. I'm not sure that just because the stem cell field has been had such high visibility, I'm not sure in other circumstances that Dr. Huang's work would have been so worldwidely publicized before it got reviewed by scientists again.
Right, okay.
I mean, anytime...
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Anytime something like this happens, it's a tragedy for the field, whether the field is business or whether it's science or whether it's, you know, politics. These are tragedies. But I think it's important to realize that in this case, most of these problems were revealed by South Korean scientists.
So in a way, it at least shows that the field is capable of tracking itself and spotting errors at ultimately in some
Right. Sense. It's the way science works.
Okay, well, I'd like now to turn to this whole issue of egg donation, and I gave a brief explanation at the start of this segment about how cloning works, but the process isn't very efficient, and so you do need a lot of eggs. What does it take for a woman, Anne Kiesling, to donate her eggs for scientific research?
It's a pretty lengthy process, actually. We've sort of added up the hours, and it turns out to probably take about 100 hours by the time you go through all of the psychological screening. It's in many ways a more rigorous human subjects intake review than other types of medical research, because these are perfectly normal women who are willing to go through a research procedure. They go through a lot of psychological testing, they go through a lot of physical testing, and then they have to spend about a week and a half injecting themselves with hormones, and that period of time requires very close monitoring. It's like going through a cycle of in vitro fertilization. It's a little less rigorous than that, but the process is pretty similar.
I see. And do women get paid to do this or not paid to do this? I mean, the Korean scientists admitted they paid, and that doesn't seem so egregious given the amount of pain and effort that a woman has to go through.
Payment for egg donation is actually standard in infertility centers. They always pay for their egg donors, and I think concern about payment being an inducement for women to do a procedure that they might otherwise not do is what's causing the discussion about whether they're paid or not, because all normal human subjects that go through any kind of research procedure, they're always reimbursed for their time. And the fact that this has become so controversial for egg donors, I think, is somehow a fallout from the very high payments that women who go through egg collection cycles for infertility clinics are paid vast sums of money in some cases. So I think there's a real concern that this is a way to protect women as to whether or not they should be reimbursed.
One of the things that's really come up here is...
Yes, Dr. Zoloth, go ahead.
Donating one's eggs is different from being a research subject in the ordinary course of things. And in some ways, I think it's a category error to think of it as research participation for which there's some money paid for your time. I think it's much more like the kind of extraordinary altruistic gesture that we expect when people who donate organs, living organ donors to their family members, or even in some rare cases to strangers, increasingly common actually, or people who donate bone marrow to just a library of bone marrow tissue. People who do those sorts of things are not thinking of themselves as research participants, but think of themselves as participants in a broad social class of altruistic acts that starts with donating blood on a sort of regular basis, and as it giving tissue that's more rare and harder to obtain ramps all the way up to people who actually donate kidneys. And in those situations, we take great care not to make it a marketplace transaction, because we don't want coercion, because we don't want the marketplace in the middle of that altruistic gift relationship. And so in thinking about this, and especially now, actually, after all this controversy, it seems to me ever more important to do some research on what we really think about altruistic acts like this. Women have far more eggs than they can than they can possibly use in the normal course of reproduction. And I say this as someone who has, like, you know, five kids and you know, has a lot of children. And even so, there's a lot more eggs around that one is born with and one is created with. So there is the capacity for this sort of extraordinary radical hospitality or radical generosity that women who have strong social needs to give eggs for the research of curing either the disease of infertility or the disease of Parkinson's or the disease of juvenile diabetes might well have a strong incentive and don't need to have it involved with marketplace relationships or how many hours they're spending doing it. And I think...
I just want to remind our listeners that we're talking about the issue of egg donation, and they are welcome to join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-8255. Talk. And I'm sorry, Dr. Zoloth, you want to finish that thought?
Let me just finish the thought, which is that one of the small ironies in this greater complicated story with multiple moral questions is that those of us who first learned about the Korean research protocols in the first paper in Science in 2004 were actually quite impressed with their statements to us, to the press, to everyone, that they did not pay egg donors, and that the egg donors were totally anonymous, and they kept them anonymous, and they kept them both anonymous and unpaid, and that was the way they had decided to do that. And armed with that inspirational thought, several of us went back and made that argument in the American debate. Ironic now, because it turns out that the researcher that's making some of the strongest charges against Lucy Kwong's work is the very person that initiated the payment and apparently paid women without telling the other colleagues in the lab and produced those eggs into this experiment, thus introducing one of the first questionable dubious ethical moments of the experiment.
Right, right. I should just say to our listeners who might be wondering what happened to Catherine DeAngelis, the editor of Journal of American Medical Association, we've lost the connection to her, and we hope to have her back, but I apologize that we can't bring her back on to add to some of this discussion. I wonder if I can turn to you, Anne Kiesling, and say, well, what about this? I mean, can women be expected through pure altruism to provide the kinds of time and effort that is required for egg donation?
I think that in when you first think about these kinds of research issues, you may use the kinds of comparisons that Dr. Zoloft is using. I'm not sure that once you get closer to it, you begin to realize that it isn't whether she's paid or not that protects this donor from any kind of coercion. It's what kind of informed consent process she goes through. So rather than focusing on whether the South Koreans actually paid or did not pay their egg donors, what you would really like to know is what kinds of information were these donors provided before they got involved at all. Now, I don't think that you want to have anybody donate their eggs who is doing it for the financial reasons. You want them to do it because they're interested in the research. I think it's different, quite different from a kidney donation in which you really hope to extend someone's life. This is purely a research project. And we have very well-defined and rigorous guidelines for recruiting people into biomedical research in this country. And it takes several weeks or several months to go through something as complicated as egg donation to make sure that this person really understands the risks to her, that she understands the possible outcome of the research. And I think that is far more important to guarantee that kind of information up front than it is whether or not you decide to compensate her for her bus travel or her time. And I think at first it seems like you're going to protect people by not compensating them for their time. But once you look at this particular problem, I think you realize that an egg donor cycle, even whether it's for research or for an infertility clinic, costs about $20,000 or $25,000. And that's for the cost of the medical team, the testing, the hormones, which are very expensive. So whether or not you compensate the donor for the 100 hours it takes her to be involved is a pretty small piece of that pie.
We're talking about the ethics of egg donation, and you're welcome to join us, 800-989-8255. I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We were just talking with Anne Kiesling. You had another thought to add, Dr. Kiesling.
No, actually, that was me taking a breath.
Okay. Well, then, sorry. Let's go to Dr. Zoloth. So, I mean, this is a difficult thing. I mean, what do you hear? What do you feel when you hear about the women? You know, the expense and the time. It's not as Dr. Kiesling said. Giving a kidney to save a life. This is not just research, but it's research. It's not life saving necessarily.
It's research that people believe in or don't believe in, and thus they're incentivized to do it. We all do the work we believe in. We all donate charity. We donate all sorts of things for causes or research interests or ideas that we support and believe in. This is one more way to do this. And in fact, Emmanuel Levinas, a philosopher that I study a lot, it's rare to have him on Science Friday, but then there you go, believes deeply that we actually owe to one another the very skin of our bodies, the totality of our capacities should be exchanged in a sort of in a moral economy that's different from any sort of coercive marketplace economy. The amounts of money that are given to donors I'm less worried about money coercion, though I think it is an important symbolic gesture for us in the same way that it was for blood donation. Even though we don't know that the blood is going for one particular person, one donates to the general idea of giving blood. We're careful in phase one clinical trials of all sorts of research not to confuse what's called therapeutic misconception with the goals of pure research. And I think here, too, as Dr. Kiesling,
well, wait a minute. Maybe you have to explain that. Okay. What is the therapeutic misconception?
The therapeutic misconception happens when we're really doing an experiment about a new drug or a new procedure, and in what's called the first phase or phase one trials, clinical trials, we can't promise it's going to work at all. We don't even know and what's going to happen. In fact, you're supposed to have a sort of equipoise or in-betweenness. You're supposed to not know which side of the research will work, if your drug will work or not. Hence, you do a trial, and you do it in an anonymous or what we used to call blinded way to say, we don't know which group of you will work out better.
Yeah. So in other words, people are inclined to think that because they're in a clinical trial, something good is going to happen for them, and they don't really understand the process, that it might be good and it might be bad.
It might be dangerous. It might be quite right. Dangerous. Hence, you have to try it, or it might do nothing. And it's that confusion is one that we take great care to explain over and over and over again.
I wonder if people really hear that, because it's such a difficult concept to get involved in. That I really think that I've talked to a lot of people in clinical trials, and they say, yes, I know, but the reason I went into the clinical trial is I wanted to get better. But I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there for now, because we have to take a short break. We're talking about egg donation, and we'll be back to take your calls at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. We'll be right back.